All right, so winning and losing successfully is this workshop, and we'll be discussing winning and losing on the playground and also in academics. Now, I should just mention this right at the beginning that I teach the upper grades, 8th through 10th, is primarily what I've taught. And so I'm gearing this kind of from my perspective, teaching those ages of students. However, I think even if you teach younger grades, there'd be some things that you can learn here as well. Now, we could summarize winning and losing successfully by simply saying the old quip, be a good sport, right? But what does it mean to be a good sport? And how do I teach this to my students? And I have come to believe that everything that we do in school as teachers should be defined with kind of one overarching goal in mind, and that is we're developing these young people to be kingdom builders in Christ's kingdom. And so this defines why we teach our academics, defines why we challenge our students and stretch our students beyond their comfort zones, and it defines why we play together on the playground. And if you think about it, winning and losing successfully should be an important part of being a kingdom builder or serving Christ's kingdom. Because we're all going to win and lose sometimes in life, right? And the fact is, we can handle both the winning and the losing successfully, or we can handle it unsuccessfully. One of the things that I've discovered helpful to do as I've prepared for workshops is to explore first what we as teachers should be modeling to our students, because I believe that's one of the best ways to teach. And, of course, this subject is no exception to that. So how can I model winning and losing successfully to my students? I'll bump over one slide here. Let's see. Sorry, I got a little behind here on my thing. How can we model winning or losing successfully? First, we can be successful in what we model by keeping a hopeful outlook. And the Bible talks a lot about looking forward to the hope that is before us, being anxious for nothing. And so this is something we can model to our students. We can stay hopeful even during life's losses, and recognizing that God can be in our losses, guiding us and molding us, but that He will also provide. He promises to provide for our needs. And so that can help us stay hopeful and positive. We can be successful by keeping a humble outlook. When we win in life, we can take the wins with a bit of a grain of salt and recognize and rejoice in God's blessings. These wins that we can have in life, they strengthen our faith. They help us stay positive when the hard things do come, when we look back and remember all the things that God has done for us. And one warning here, wherefore let him that thinketh he standeth take heed lest he fall, and do not think more highly of yourself than you ought to think. So take wins in life with a grain of salt. Be successful by staying focused on the task at hand. So when we are winning or losing, either one, big time in life, it can become really challenging to stay focused on the day-to-day tasks. And this is a really hard one for me. When I'm winning, I kind of get enthralled with the excitement of winning. And when I'm losing, I'm desperate to get out. And so I'm doing everything I can to get out of the mess that I'm in. But part of being successful in this thing of losing or winning is just staying focused on those tasks that we still need to get done. Be successful by giving your best, even when you're facing your worst. And here again, I'm preaching to myself a bit, because when things aren't going very well in my life or in my classroom, I can get kind of fed up and want to throw up my hands and give up. And we can ask ourselves, is it worth this effort anymore? So being successful is giving our best. And just important to note here about giving our best, this isn't the same thing as being perfect in every scenario. And sometimes we as teachers get that a little confused. Rather, it's doing the best with the time and the knowledge that we have. And sometimes our best isn't going to look very good, actually. Maybe that's our fault. Maybe it's because we weren't the stewards that we should have been. But many times it's just the circumstances that we're in. And either way, whether we are poor steward of our time or whether it's the circumstances, we can learn from those experiences. And part of doing our best is learning from our mistakes and our experiences and then being able to do better the next time. We can be successful by never giving up and always getting back up. And I think of the Bible stories of Joseph and Daniel, two young men, probably teenagers in their upper teens at least, who faced really difficult circumstances, leaving their families when they were very young and going to a foreign land. And Joseph, he purposed to do his best no matter where he was, whether that was serving Potiphar or whether it was in prison. Great example. And also Daniel, arriving there in Babylon, he purposed in his heart not to defile himself with the king's meat. And that purposing is something that has really stood out to me over the years. We can, like Daniel, we can purpose in our hearts to never give up in spite of our circumstances and to always do our best. So keep pressing on as cheerfully as possible, rallying yourself and others around you when things are tough. And maybe you just need to go to a person and say, I'm in a tough situation and I need some help here, or I need some counsel. And this one right here is just a really great example to model to your students about how to win or lose successfully in life. Be successful by solving problems strategically rather than making vague attempts at progress. And for older students especially, this is a really important life skill to be teaching them, this thing of solving problems strategically. And most young people aren't very good at it. And it's something that they have to develop. In fact, it's something that they'll develop even way past school, up into their 20s at least. And this thing of solving problems strategically has place in the classroom and also on the playground as well. We sometimes, when we're trying to solve problems, sometimes we have to think a little bit outside of the box. And I haven't always been the best at doing that. I think I'm getting better at that sometimes. But analyzing a problem and figuring out a solution. And games on the playground can be actually a really good way to exercise this in kind of a fun scenario. But we do it with academics as well. Be successful by trying something new. Be unafraid to try something new, especially if something isn't working very well for you. And this has a large range of applications, from your procedures at school to your career even, or to how we play sports. The list could go on. So try something new. Be successful by working together as a team. And this is just a core component of being a follower of Christ, this thing of fellowship with the local body of Christ. And as very essence, this thing of brotherhood is about working together as a team. And even outside of church, this is a really important life skill for anyone to develop. And it applies itself as a teacher. It applies itself in many ways, like working as a team with your co-teachers as a team with your school board, as a team with your principal or administrator, as a team with the parents of your students, working as a team with your local brotherhood, and beyond school, if you're not teaching or taking summer work or whatever it looks like, on the mission field, there's teamwork. In the husband and wife relationship, there's teamwork. In sports, there should be teamwork. And this whole idea of learning to work unselfishly for the good of the team is so important for students to learn. All right. Things that we should model, right? That's what we're talking about. Things that we should model to our students about winning or losing successful. So be successful by thinking ahead. Failure to plan can get us in trouble. If you don't have plans in place, you're not going to make just a whole lot of progress. It's a little bit like a chess game where you are thinking ahead and analyzing, making decisions about what might happen in the future. But this isn't the same thing as that the Bible warns against. The Bible warns about not being anxious. This is different. This is rather like the ant the Bible talks about, who planned ahead for the winter and gathered up his food. And as a teacher, you can plan for so many things. The details of each week, how you might handle a likely conflict with a student, planning ahead for your fall program or your Christmas program, whatever that looks like, report cards, what books you will read. I still need to do that. Games you will play, and just general plans for the year. Be successful by being willing to take calculated risks. And I throw this one in here because no matter how well you plan, at some point you have to kind of step out and a little bit of faith and see if things work out. If we never take risks, we end up being a little bit like that servant the Bible talks about who just went and buried his talent and never made anything of it. So you're going to have to take some risk. I'm an overly cautious person by nature, and it's taken me a long time to learn that taking some calculated risks can be good and healthy. But I've also learned that losses can be overcome, but wasted time can never be undone. So, modeling the behavior of winning and losing successfully to our students, that's going to take care of a lot of problems, takes care of a lot of the teaching that you might need to do with your students and training them. But usually, young people need a bit more than just our example to live life effectively. They need some speaking, some direct training as well. So besides modeling behavior ourselves to our students, how can a teacher help his students win and lose successfully? So this will be the next part we want to think about. And back at the beginning, I mentioned that our primary vision as teachers should be this thing of building up young people to be kingdom builders, effective in Christ's kingdom, right? And I believe that we have to be proactive about this and visionary about this. And like I said again, everything we should do at school should be kind of with this in mind, whether it's the academics, the learning, even cleaning, the games that we play, whatever it is. We have to be kind of proactive in speaking this thing of kingdom building into our students' lives. And so this next part I've broken down into three very simple times, actually, times of the day, so to speak, that you should be proactive in speaking into your students' lives. And I broke it down into really simple format because I'm hoping that will help you take this and remember it without having to look up your notes. What did Ms. Nathan say about this? And these three times that you should be proactive in speaking to your students is before they win or lose, during their winning and losing, and after they win and lose. So all the time, I guess, is where that comes out. And I want to look a little bit at each of these time frames, and I'm going to give some practical examples of what I've found helpful in my classroom with my students. And I'm hopeful that you'll find some principles behind what I've done maybe helpful in your classroom. Your application will very likely look a little bit different than mine, and that's fine. It should be that way many times. So, be proactive by planning and speaking in advance. Now, over the years that I've taught for 5 years now, I've had a number of students who have struggled with keeping their competitiveness under control. And we would get out on the ball field or the volleyball court, and things would start getting out of hand. Tempers would begin to flare. And especially the first year that I taught, we had some bad language that was going on, and it was not a fun scenario. But some things that you can do to speak and plan in advance. The first one is addressing the individuals that are causing the problem. And this is an important step for us teachers to get comfortable taking. It can be difficult for us to do this. The fact is, a lot of us teachers can be kind of intimidated by our students sometimes, especially a strong-willed, angry student, right? So when you sit down with this person, this individual, to discuss the situation, be careful not to be accusatory. Rather, maybe you could commend them for their competitiveness. And then explain some things about what their competitiveness can do on the playground. When they get angry at their classmates or their teammates even for making a bad play or whatever, just understanding that that can actually make their teammates play worse because they'll lose all the confidence that they had. And so they're not helping their team by getting angry and yelling at their teammates. You can encourage them to point out mistakes that their teammates make in a positive sort of way. I've encouraged my students to, if I have a good softball player and he or she sees another student making a poor play, maybe there's a technique problem, and maybe they could take that person aside and do a little bit of training with that person and help them out in that sort of way. That's how they should be taking their competitiveness and building up their teammates and their classmates. So many times, just by having a kind of an encouraging, upbuilding chat with an individual about this can help them want to try to do better. It can help them understand you as a teacher when you kind of crack down on the competitiveness. So I think that's really important. The next thing we can do is address the class. This is something I've done frequently before I dismiss my classroom out for a game. I tell them my expectations about the game while I still have their attention. And one of the things that I remind them of over and over and over again is that the priorities for play on the playground should be in this order. First, everyone should have a good time. And secondly, we should be learning team skills. And then finally, we can have some healthy competition that's fun. A lot of students want to put that last one first. And I remind my classroom that when some of them are especially competitive, some of them are just geared that way, and they get a lot of fun out of it. But not everyone is wired that way. Not everyone gets their fun out of a game from this strong competition. And when strong competition starts happening between two individuals, often on the two opponents, right? And they start getting angry and frustrated at each other, then there's a whole group of students that start not having fun. And that's a problem. But if we use teamwork, if we focus on making sure everyone is having a good time, then everyone will have time and everyone will win, right? address the guys. Competitiveness usually goes along with the guys. I guess this could go, in my experience, it's mostly been the gentlemen. Let's just put it that way. In my setting, I've learned that softball and basketball games are usually where things get most out of hand. And so for these particular games, I'm especially proactive about speaking with the guys before we head out. And it's my procedure before every ball game to send my ladies out. They go out and start warming up, throwing the ball back and forth. And I keep the guys in the classroom. And I spend just a couple of minutes with them, and there's just several things that we cover. First of all, I ask them if they're good with the teams that we've come up with. Because when I get their input on the teams that I've made, or maybe a group of students made, then they're forced to take responsibility for any unfairness that they perceive in those teams. And that has been very effective to do that. We figure out the batting order and some just kind of nitty-gritty stuff like that. And then I just encourage them to go out there and be a good sport and have a lot of fun. And I like to throw in, don't kill each other at the end. That little chat with the guys makes a huge difference. It really does. And I do it every time before we go out to softball. And sometimes basketball as well. Another thing you could try is having a game planning committee. And this is something I started this past school year. It was an idea I got from Gerald Miller. And it's really revolutionized our third recess, which is our long recess. So each week, I assign a group of three or four, maybe five students that sit down together and plan the week's recesses. And even they plan the teams many times. And this removes a lot of stress for me to figure out what we're going to play and to come up with teams, so it's good for me. And it places more of the stress on the students. It gives them a chance to work together in a committee, which is an important life skill again. It gives someone in that group a chance to take leadership and say, okay, this is what we're going to do, and now we're going to do this. And it also gives them the opportunity to take the backlash if the rest of the classroom isn't very happy about what they do. And that's something they need to learn how to deal with, is when other people are unhappy with their plans. I, as a teacher, have to face that. They should be learning. That's a life skill that we need to be learning about. And it's interesting. During the winter, when we are mostly playing in our gym because it's sloppy outside, the game committee will often plan about 15 or 20 minutes of some sort of kind of social game like SWAT before we go play volleyball for the rest of the recess. And I was really surprised by this, but it breaks the ice. They have a lot of fun. And then they go out there and enjoy their volleyball game a lot more, it seems like. And as part of their involvement, the class as a whole, they came to me and they suggested that we cut about 5 minutes off of our other earlier recesses in the day and then tack that on to our final recess. And I said, okay, I think I could work with that. And so that was a suggestion I agreed to. I also moved my recess from kind of in the middle of the day to the very last period of the day so that everyone could come in and we'd just be done for the day then. And they really like that. There's been some trade-offs for me as a teacher in that, but I like that setup pretty well. So working together like that, having the students give their input and plan the games and stuff, it helps them take ownership of their fun, their recesses. And they actually have more fun because they're invested now in that recess time. Okay, let's speak about during. Be proactive by being involved. Once your planning and pep talking is done, it's time to dismiss your students out to the playground. And we teach winning and losing by being involved in the games. And so this is pretty straightforward, but you can bear with me here. So how can we involve ourselves? First one, be involved by being present. And this kind of goes without saying, but there have been many times as a teacher and as I'm kind of an administrator there at my school, where I've kind of felt overwhelmed with all the tasks that I've had to get done and the classes I've had to prep for. And being involved at recess can get kind of hard. So one of the things that I've discovered works well for me is if I need to, I will allow myself to come in early from recess, maybe 10 or 15 minutes early from recess, to help sort through some things for my next class time or for the end of the day before the students come in. And what I've found is that by this time, my students are invested enough in their game. I know kind of how the tenor of the game is going, and I know that I can leave and they'll probably be okay. I can trust my group of students, or at least the group I had last year. But the bottom line, and this may not work very well for younger students probably, but the bottom line, it's essential that you be involved with your organized recess. But maybe it's okay to also recognize that it's okay to have some flexibility for you as a teacher to come back in early, or maybe have another teacher that you swap some recess times with so that you have some time to prepare for your next class. That's just an idea for you. Be involved by remembering you are a teacher. Do you ever forget that? See, teaching doesn't stop on the playground, and maybe that's what we can forget sometimes. So when you're playing volleyball, you can act as a team coach and coach these young people on some basic volleyball techniques. Now, my students, a lot of them are better at volleyball than I am now. But you can teach them at the beginning on things to watch out for and where to stand to accept a serve and just some different basic things like that. Sometimes I monitor volleyball games from our gym balcony because the teams work out better if I'm not playing. And so there I can watch for all the different teams and watch for ways to encourage different students to improve or a team to improve, and I'll yell down little encouragements and suggestions. If we're playing capture the flag, a lot of times, I don't know if this is a game that y'all play or not, but a lot of times students kind of go haphazardly about it. And you can pull a group of students together and say, okay, let's come up with some ideas of how we can get that flag and work as a team, as a little team, towards capturing that flag. If you're playing Ultimate Frisbee, making sure that everyone is assigned another person for defense instead of just kind of haphazardly running around the field. So many things on the playground can happen haphazardly, and just giving some instruction is part of your job as a teacher. When we play softball, one of the things that I do that probably seems strange to some people is I never actually play on a team. I play shortstop all the time, the entire game. And what I enjoy about this is it allows me to interact with the entire ball field, the infielders, the outfielders, the base players, everyone. I'm right in the center of what's going on, and I like it. It allows me to do coaching of the outfield, the infield, the base players. And so I try to work on training those base players. Many of our base players, you know, they're fairly new at this and they need some instruction. Just teaching them to be aware of where they should throw a ball when a play is made, thinking of that in advance before the ball is actually hit. And just basic things like that can be helpful. And keep them involved in the game, right? Be proactive by following up. So this is after the game. After recess, you should follow up. Commend your students for what they did well. You can say, wow, that was a really fun game. You can commend them for giving their best effort. Maybe the team that lost very badly, you can just say, you know what, you guys lost badly, but I was really impressed with your effort. Good job. I appreciate that. And just commend them as much as possible and do that often. And the thing is, when you commend your classroom a lot about what they do good, it also gives you license as a teacher to give them some critiquing as well, and to speak into maybe things that they didn't do so well. And they'll pay more attention. If you're always critiquing, they're going to tune you out, right? Don't be scared about speaking the truth. If you had a really bad game, just tell them so. Say, hey, you know what? No one had fun out there today. And here's a couple of reasons I think why. Okay? Maybe you can give them a chance to give their feedback on a game. And sometimes just letting them speak what they saw on the ball field helps them kind of process things about what happened. And they're probably going to be more likely to remember that next time and try harder. So we talked mostly about the playground so far. So what we as teachers should model, and then we talked a lot of this last part about the playground. So for the next little stretch here, we're going to talk about the classroom, winning and losing successfully in the classroom. First one here, make sure that students can win at something academically. If you have a student that is failing at everything academically, I believe we need to start backing off of that student and reassessing and try to come up with something that we can offer that student that they can win at academically. So think about this. If a student's only experience at school is failure in the classroom, then you may not be teaching them grit and determination like we'd like to think we are. Rather, you may be only teaching them that they're going to fail in life too. And that's not helpful. And in fact, that's pretty sobering if you stop and think about it. And as I've thought about this and I've learned about this truth, I find it easier to do some things that maybe I would not have done before. Like cutting an entire class for a student, or having them audit a class instead. Or putting a student back a level in math or language if they need that. Those are a couple of things to consider doing. And I wouldn't be quick to jump to these solutions. I think that sometimes they are necessary and healthy, but not always. And if you think maybe a student is in need of something like that, then definitely go to your principal, your school board, or someone else who's knowledgeable and give their input on something like that. Don't make it just your decision, but think about possibly doing some things like that. Talk with a student that is constantly failing academically. Tell them that you really want them to be able to win and do well in their classwork, and that here's a few things that you want to try for a couple of weeks to see if things go better for them. And that will get them excited, knowing that you have their back, that you're working with them, that you haven't given them up as a failure, and they'll want to try harder. And if you can give them that taste of winning academically, I've found sometimes it can change their whole lives, their academic in school and even beyond that. It can be really huge. So winning should never just be on the playground. If a student is exceptional at sports but fails miserably at academics, you're probably only training them that they can't think and that they're basically good at just using their hands, right? And maybe it's true that they are very gifted with using their hands, but everyone can think, and everyone should be encouraged to use their minds to think, even if they aren't making perfect grades. So they should be allowed to win academically. Encourage students with the idea that God gave each of us different talents. So some, they are especially gifted academically, but perhaps they struggle socially. Maybe a student is athletic, but they struggle with their academics. Maybe a student excels socially, but they are only mediocre academically. Maybe they excel both socially, athletically, and academically, but then they struggle with a lack of self-discipline or with self-consciousness. All of us have our own sets of strengths and weaknesses, right? And pointing this out to our students can be helpful in kind of equalizing the classroom and give us a better understanding of our value in God's eyes. And that's something that a lot of young people are kind of sorting through in this stage of life. Their value before God, and it's a really influential time to speak into this and let them know that they are very valuable in God's eyes. So in conclusion here, for the workshop part, we need to be proactive about modeling and training our students to win and lose successfully. And this happens on the playground, it happens in the classroom as well. And I just encourage you to remember that your purpose in teaching is, the ultimate purpose is to bring these young people into the kingdom of Christ, not only into it, but also to be a productive part of that kingdom. They should be zealous of good works. And as a teacher, if you can have this underlying vision, it can really be life-changing for you and for your classroom and for your students, because it seasons each decision that you make. So at this point, I would like to give you time to give your input or to ask questions, and we can all maybe work together on answering those. And I'll give you the time now. Anything that you found to work really well in your classroom, some ideas for the rest of us, or some questions.
I would just like to point out that I think maybe we have a bit of a culture among our communities that maybe this is more of a parent problem, but I think it's something we relate to. We want to see all of our students be an overachiever. And so then when we have that student that is challenged academically, it becomes really super difficult to relate to when really what they need to be, what needs to happen is they need to ratchet back a little bit to get them more in skill appropriate work.
Mm-hmm.
How do we, any helps for navigating that when the parents are just like, no way.
Yeah. Anyone have a thought on that? I've not run to that situation in my classroom where I've went to a parent and said, hey, I think we should ratchet back. Would you be okay with that? And they were like, oh, absolutely not. So I've not run into that personally. More often I've run into the other way where a parent thinks maybe I'm pushing a student a little too hard. But maybe someone has had that experience. And
because I'm not talking in a teacher perspective,
mm-hmm.
I'm talking from a board perspective. Ken Kaufman told us that if a child is not learning where he's at, we're not benefiting the child anything.
Mm-hmm.
He said, give the child a placement test and put him where he can learn. He mm-hmm. said, actually, a child that is defeating his sixth or his eighth grade of school when he's doing sixth grade work and he's learning,
mm-hmm.
he said he's actually learning.
Mm-hmm.
He said, if you're pushing him through eighth grade and he's failing, you're not teaching him anything. And that's been a real help to us. And you know, if a child is just not making it, I know parents don't like it. You know, we like to see our children graduate when they should.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, you know, there it comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of the children have the same gifts. And that's been a blessing for our school. I can't say that we have had a lot of opposition from the parents. Most times the parents can see if we sit down with them and explain that your child, where he's at, is not learning. If we let him do something that he can learn, it's actually going to benefit the child in the future. Most parents are open to that. But I know what you mean. It's kind of like this culture. We want our children, but we want them to learn too.
In connecting with this thing about winning, it applies academically, but otherwise too. Last year, Aquila Martin was here and he was talking about students repeating grades and things like that. And he told me something that stuck with me. The stigma of repeating a grade, whatever, is exclusively in the minds of the adults, not in the minds of the children. And I can say that from my own classroom. Maybe this eighth grader is doing sixth grade level work. The other students have the attitude of, so, what does that have to do with it? Let's go play.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't bother them. This person has red hair. This person needs your beauty grade. This person has glasses. So what?
Yeah.
And I can say the same thing. Give them a chance to succeed. And if all the parents are okay with it, and if the adults are fine with it, the children could care less hard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there might be some school cultures where that could be an issue, where other students are teasing, but I think if our church is careful about speaking into that kind of thing, then yes, that should be a comfortable thing for students to work on different levels. And another challenging thing, and I don't have good answers really, is distinguishing between the lazy student and the one who actually isn't able. I struggle with figuring that one out still. But sometimes we do run into that. So I often opt to push them harder than maybe they think I can. I try to push them hard for a while and then slowly back off, and not just back off all in one. Anything else? All right, I think our time is up. Thank you for your input and your attention. God bless you all.